Welcome to the Dallas Soccer Show. This is Tristan Vick. I'm back. Dustin, who do we have for everybody tonight?
Tonight our guest is Adam Bells. He was referenced to us by one of our listeners, Austin Banks. He is a Twitter GIF guy and a U.S. men's national team expert, and which should, you know, was right up your alley, Tristan.
Yep. He also has a podcast he does on his own with another buddy of his, Greg Velasquez, called the Scuff Podcast. So check him out on the Scuff Podcast, as well as on Twitter at Adam Bells, spelled backwards.
Yes.
Which we'll give you that one. Listen to the show, get to the end, and he'll tell you exactly how to spell it. We'll also tweet out a link in the show notes and on the Dallas Soccer Show Twitter page. This episode, we've got a recap of the Seattle Sounders and FC Dallas match, which I attended with my three-year-old daughter.
And I stood home and watched on TV.
That's right, with a two-hour delay, unless you got it live on the FC Dallas Facebook page. And then my daughter, who was three, waved Clint Dempsey bye-bye after he elbowed somebody in the gonads. So stick around for the hot take on that, as well as we get really in-depth on the future of the national team, players we're excited about, and we figure out, is there a correlation between Freddie Adu's failure in Europe and Christian Pulisic's success? You'll want to stick around for that.
I'm on the edge of my seat, and I just listened to that conversation.
Don't fall. You're on the second floor. It'll be loud. You might wake up your kids.
It's true. Anyways, without further ado, here's our conversation with Adam Bells. The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage. Hey, Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dustin.
No problem. So we learned about you from one of our listeners, and he called you a Twitter GIF guy, but I'm sure there's more to it, as I've learned. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what you're all about?
Yeah, I'm a daily newspaper reporter in Minneapolis. I actually cover City Hall for my day job, and I'm also a huge soccer fan, a huge men's national team fan. And I started a newsletter about a year ago where I write about it. I write about the team and about players abroad once a week. And that sort of turned into like starting an alternative Twitter account and creating a lot of the GIFs that you talked about. That's kind of my calling card on Twitter now.
Tell us about the newsletter. I'm kind of curious about how that's been, because it's been a pretty rough year for the U.S. national team. So a lot of ups and downs, mostly downs.
Yeah, I started it back, like I said, like about this time last year when I and a lot of us were full of hope. And there was this possibility that Weston McKennie would come good and start getting playing time. But we just had these qualifiers coming up against Honduras and Panama. And I was getting more and more interested in Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie and following them in the Bundesliga, and then following anybody else who might come in and make a splash, you know, and become a national team, a realistic national team choice. So the newsletter had a lot of momentum after that big win over Honduras. I was really feeling the rhythm of things. And, you know, even though we had our ups and downs right up until we crashed out of the qualifiers against Trinidad, I was feeling great up until then. And I kind of had a few days where I was like, is it even worth it doing this anymore? And I ultimately decided, yeah, I'm not gonna quit. There's gonna be another World Cup in 5 years, so
I can't say that we haven't, or at least I didn't have thoughts of that whenever FC Dallas was like losing every game at the second half of the season. It's like, okay, well, we got to talk about another loss again. So I totally feel you there.
What was harder for you guys, the end of the season for Dallas or the U.S. crashing out of the World Cup?
For me, it's got to be the U.S. team. I can't even tell you how disappointed I was in that team because of so many players that I had had high hopes on coming through for the World Cup. I felt like our squad or our core team would stay intact, but I felt like there was a chance for a lot of new faces to go to Russia. And I'm really excited about that, especially on the back line, which like the back line's a mess. But I felt like, oh, if we can just qualify and get in, we can maybe fix some things in some of these friendlies. And with FC Dallas, it was a situation where I knew we had a good team, but and you talk to anybody and you follow anyone and even the coach himself, like nobody knew what was happening. It was like a total freak occurrence where we would create chances and we wouldn't get them on target, or we would have opportunities, but shots weren't being taken. And I knew that this coming season would be a decent season. Like I'm not disappointed, I am disappointed, but I'm not like disheartened for the future. And so I definitely would say the U.S. national team was, I mean, that's just so tough. And like, a World Cup is a huge event. You knew it'd be great for the game. That being said, I feel like it's almost a good thing we're not going to the World Cup based on like how political it is nowadays with Russia. And so I would rather that not be a football I have to juggle, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And so now I can just watch it as a neutral. Yeah, I can watch it as a neutral and just enjoy it. But Pulisic definitely deserves to go to as many World Cups as he can. So I feel bad for the guy.
I actually felt worse about FC Dallas at the time. But the closer the World Cup gets and the more I'm rethinking that and the more I'm disappointed that the U.S. isn't going.
Is it weird to be more disappointed? I feel like I would be more, I'll be more disappointed if, because they do the vote for the 26th World Cup right before the World Cup starts. I feel like I could be even more disappointed if we don't get that for some reason.
Oh, for sure. I'll be definitely more disappointed.
That would be like my only saving grace. Like that would just be like a total gut punch that's like kicking you when you're down and there's no hope for the future because who the 2030 is going to go to Uruguay and South America because it's the centenary. I mean, there's no way that they can award it to Morocco, I don't think. But then again, I said that about Qatar. And so what do I know?
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, obviously stranger things have happened. And, you know, the reporting out of ESPN in particular from Sam Borden shows that it's not a done deal. So,
yep.
I'm emotionally prepared for that.
You've got to be.
But the key thing, you know, the key thing is ultimately is not hosting the World Cup, but having a better national team and doing better in World Cups. Because unless Bruce Arena had been very aggressive in reshuffling the roster, had we qualified for the World Cup, we probably wouldn't have done that well. We haven't done that well in any World Cup except 2002. You know, we always just scrape out of the group.
Yeah, and, it's pretty pathetic if you look at the win-loss record, so to speak. It's pretty bad. I would agree with that. I guess I just would hope that I don't understand why we don't have a full-time coach or at least more progress or time frame. I guess there's no rush necessarily, but having a full-time coach would be useful to have as opposed to this interim guy who's not really an interim, but he is an interim. And it's just
he's like a congressional continuing resolution.
Or like, you do like a recess appointment or something where it's like, it only lasts for a couple months or something. I mean, he just like kind of hangs out there and he's able to get some people that have played for us at the youth level, which I guess we can get into. But I feel like there's a real possibility that the reason why we weren't able to get somebody like Jonathan Gonzalez is because we didn't really have a staff that was sure of what their place was in the future. And it's kind of worrying considering how many dual nationals that are eligible for the U.S. we could be pulling off. But
yeah, in my sense is there's no dual national who is as big of a flight risk as he was. But, you know, I guess a lot of people didn't expect him to go too. So
True. Yeah, I definitely didn't see that coming. But 18-year-old kids change their mind all the time. So maybe he'll change it again. He hasn't, I guess, maybe he's already filed the paperwork to make it official. But
yeah, he's gone. He's done a one-time switch, which means he can't switch back.
All right. Well, hey, let's take a step back from the U.S. national team. Let's talk about all of those gifts that you make on Twitter. Like, tell us about how that got started. How do you do that? What do you look for when you're trying to make one? Tell us about those.
Yeah, it's a good question. So one of the things I did for the newsletter, started doing for the newsletter in the summer, is creating all touches videos. You know, you watch a whole game. So Jonathan Gonzalez is a perfect example. I was doing all touches videos of him in September. I was like, hell, this guy, he's 18. He's starting for one of the best clubs in Liga MX, and he's playing center midfield. I got to know more about this guy. So I signed up for, hopefully no copyright lawyers at Univision are listening to your show at the moment, but
we have tens of listeners.
I signed up for the Latin Fubo package, which is excellent. And it's like $15 a month. And I started watching those games, and then you can get software that'll allow you to record what's on your screen. So it was very time consuming. You go through and timestamp every touch and kind of make a note about them, and then go through and expand it to the full screen, record that little 15, 20 second clip, and then use iMovie to put them all together and then throw a soundtrack on it, you know? And some of the stuff I did of Jonathan Gonzalez in particular, it was hard to see his quality if you just sort of were half watching a soccer game, you know, if you see these isolated moments where you're like, oh, he saw that play developing and then broke it up, you know, and ran 30 yards to break it up. You see 10 of those in succession, and you're like, dang, he really is good. He doesn't look that good when you first watch him, but you realize how good he is. So that's how I sort of got started with the visual stuff. And you know, Daryl Grove at the Total Soccer Show and I corresponded a lot. He loved those videos, and I realized that people loved them on Reddit, and it's hard to share those on Twitter because people don't want to click through to a streamable website necessarily. And then you also kind of open yourself up to more scrutiny. So it was kind of just a link in the newsletter, and people who got my newsletter could easily access it, but no, you know, or people on Reddit could, but it wasn't like I publicized it a lot. That sort of evolved into making GIFs, because you can do essentially the same thing, but you can tweet them each out. You sometimes get some traction with those GIF threads. Not always, but sometimes you do if it's a particularly exciting performance. And my principle is, I'm not trying to hype players. I'm trying to this maybe sounds a little sanctimonious, but I'm just trying to inform people about what kind of player they are, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are. So if somebody makes a really bad play, I try not to leave out the bad stuff and only show the good stuff. So I started doing that on Twitter. And the way I do it is very simple. You can download I use Chrome as my browser. You can download a Chrome extension that makes GIFs. So you I think it picks up pretty much any HTML video that's playing in your browser. And then you just sort of click when you want it to start, click stop when you want it to stop. And then you have a file. It's probably maybe too much information, but Twitter has a 15 meg limit, which requires you to make choices how much of the buildup do you want to show before a goal? I mean, for me, often buildup is the most interesting thing before a goal. And I don't just mean the pass right before the goal.
Yeah.
And so you have to choose you could lower the quality of the GIF and get more a longer time frame, or you can crop it down. You can use websites to crop GIFs. There's probably better ways to do it, but I use a website to do that. So it sounds like it's a lot of work, but actually GIFs are a lot simpler and faster than making those videos that I talked about doing back in September. So I haven't done many of those lately. Just mostly do the GIFs because they're easier. And with like MLS Live being free and the Fubo app being like really good on a desktop computer, it's very easy to, I mean, I can GIF just about anything, not games in the Belgian league or the Danish league, unfortunately, but a lot of stuff.
Yeah. How do you find all the video for like some of those players that are in, you know, second or third division in obscure countries in Europe?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one that really springs to mind is Keaton Parks, playing mostly in the second. He's a Dallas kid playing mostly in second division in Portugal. Those games are not available to me. But sometimes there's somebody on Big Soccer who makes all touches videos of Parks who must be living in Portugal or have like some just insane cable package. I can just make GIFs off of those. And occasionally those second division games will be posted to YouTube by somebody. YouTube is like really easy to work with. So you can do all the USL games cause they're all on YouTube. That's if it's a second or third division in some obscure league, it's unusual for me to have access to the video. Keaton Parks is kind of an exception because of that benevolent person on Big Soccer and whoever posts the full games to YouTube. They always get taken down relatively quickly, but if you can get in there, if you can get in there and get the GIFs. Yeah. If you can get the GIFs, you have the GIFs forever, you know?
That's true.
The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. men's national team news and coverage.
That transitions us into the FC Dallas Seattle match that was this past Sunday that I attended, and I think everybody's watched it or at least heard about the red card from Dempsey, which is probably the best GIF of the weekend outside of any goals. But typical Dempsey in his older age, getting crankier and angrier and just quite an odd move, in my opinion, considering how weak the team was to begin with.
Yeah. That's totally in my mind, that's the story of the match the news story of the match was that. I mean, totally changed. I mean, I know they were already down by one, but totally changed the whole.
It changed the complexion of the match for sure. But I mean, I'm not a Dallas homer. I would say you guys looked, I mean, you were up 1-0 when it happened. You looked like the better team for the lion's share of the first 30 minutes. I mean, Seattle was starting to play their way back in a little bit, but.
I felt the same way. The thing about it with from my perspective was we never really were challenged too much early on. And so once they went down 10, I mean, it's great to have a match like that, but it really can worry me as an FC Dallas fan. And FC Dallas fans out there, let us know what you think, but we haven't really been tested. I mean, we've only had a few matches, and aside from collapsing in the Champions League, when we get tested, we don't do too well. And so defensively, that is. And I think there's still some communication issues with the back line. I really like Reggie Cannon. I've been a big fan of that guy since I saw him last year in the U.S. Open Cup. His speed is amazing. You know, the guys that they always put at the top for corners are the guys that they trust to be able to chase down anyone else on the pitch. And Reggie Cannon's that guy for FC Dallas now, which is kind of nice. But at the same time, when we play a team that has some real offensive firepower, which the league is like turned upside down in some ways right now for some teams. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure who that is. But when we do finally play a team that starts testing us, I'll be interested to see, because we've got a brand new goalie. We've got half a back line that's kind of makeshift, depending on who's at left back. It just, we'll see. But yeah, no, the offense going forward is very promising. I really like Diaz. I love the way he's playing right now. He is at home in the middle there.
Yeah. He's fun to watch. He's really fun to watch.
I agree. He's got the head on the swivel that makes it almost every pass he makes, you know he's got something up his sleeve that you're excited to see where it's going to go.
How much of that offensive performance do you think was FC Dallas being good? And how much of it do you think was Seattle having a depleted lineup from their Champions League match in midweek? Or do you think it's both?
I think it's both. I mean, the opening goal wasn't it like a little bit of a scramble in the middle, and the ball sort of dribbled to Diaz, and he just turned and he played a perfect, I don't know if you call it a through ball, or he just sprayed it to the wing to Barrios, and then he did well to get that cross across. You know, he sort of like faked the defender. Was it Marshall maybe?
Yeah.
And then sort mm-hmm. of fainted like he was going to pass it a step before he did, and then put it right across the goal line for an easy tap in. I mean, that was against 11 men, and that was just pure goodness, you know?
Yeah. Not to call it your competitors, but I saw another video style, GIF style.
Wait, hold on.
Breakdown of that GIF same goal.
Or GIF?
What do you think?
It's an eternal debate. I don't know the answer.
All right. Sorry.
I switch back and forth.
Sorry. Go ahead, Tristan.
It's whatever. It's whatever doesn't make noise. It's a little button thing. I don't know how to do that stuff. I just talk about it. But they broke down that goal, and they point out a good point. Whenever Barrios is breaking down the wing and he kind of has the defender beat, he doesn't have quite the edge, but they pointed out this like split decision where Roman Torres, the defender for Seattle on the near side, basically Lamar could either go inside to the near post or kind of stay towards the middle. And he decides to go to the middle because he sees that Barrios has him kind of beat and takes the chance that the ball will get through the defender to him. Because if he goes on the inside, he potentially still has to beat the keeper no matter if the ball gets to him or not. And he goes through the middle, and luckily Barrios passes it early enough that he gets through and he has the tap in, which for Lamar is not always a guaranteed thing. But in this case it was, and it worked out pretty well, but it was interesting to see that there's a little bit more of a tactical, I don't know if Barrios has been told kind of to like make sure you release the pass early, because we don't have like a true target man striker anymore. Like a Rudy's good, but he was playing in weird positions on Sunday. He was all over the place. It wasn't really like a true striker in my opinion, but yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting breakdown. And then yeah, the other two goals were just, I mean, great passing, great positioning, and good finish from everyone.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think Dempsey deserved a red card?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think he deserved a red card, but I also kind of got the feeling, I mean, I was watching him in warmups and I've seen him play a couple times, and you can kind of get that feel of if somebody is really feeling it. And he was playing in such a weird position while he was on the pitch that I was really confused how they were using him. I didn't know if that was like where he was. He was coming really far back into the midfield to pick up the ball, almost as like a relief valve. And then he would move forward a little bit. But then if they had an offensive break and nothing happened, he acted like he was the lone striker, which means you have the pass to kind of just walk back to the halfway line. And he just seemed kind of disinterested in the match. I don't know. I felt like it was a red card because it was a pretty violent move. I felt like on the replay, especially, you could tell there was a lot of malice.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they went and reviewed it though, because the ref knew something happened to Hayes after he turned around and saw him kind of buckled over. And then we all kind of just stood there, and then he like kind of whistled. I think he got something from the fourth official that said, you should go take a look at that. And so he went and did that. And yeah, it didn't take him very long for him to come back and be like, yeah, you're gone. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I saw an angle, you guys may have seen this too, an angle today where it's very clear that he didn't actually hit him in the gut at all. He like just hit his wrist. I mean, I agree there was plenty of malice, but
Yeah, it's the contact, I think, that was probably the decider in terms of like taking that type of an action. I know in like basketball, there's some other rules for determining what's the ejection, but really he didn't do himself any favors with like his reaction to it or to kind of, I don't know. I mean, just, yeah, it was a silly, silly move. There's in soccer, there's some savvy veteran moves and then there's some not so savvy veteran moves. It was a very not so savvy veteran move by Dempsey.
Yeah. I agree with your assessment of him. He looks like he's not working that hard anymore. And he's not that great on the ball anymore. He's one of the guys, I know we'll talk about the national team a little more later, but he's one of the guys that I think would have been a lock for the World Cup had we qualified and would not have deserved it, you know?
Super sub position or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I could see him for like 10 minutes a game. But he's fading fast.
I would agree. The other big point that I felt was pretty interesting, and it turned out to be a good gamble, was sitting down our new signing, the Santiago Mosquera, and putting in Roland Lemah, who is apparently now a real MLS showstopper, I guess. I don't know what to say. The guy shows up in the most random games and looks fantastic, and then he'll disappear for five or six games during a stretch of the season.
Yeah, if he scores one,
it's kind of fun to get a good long look of him,
though. Yeah, if he scores one, he's going to score two or three.
Yeah. I was kind of bummed we didn't get more Paxton Pomacau. And then when we did get him, he was playing in such a weird position. I think we had talked to Carter Baum from FC Dallas earlier this year or last year, where they talked about Paxton maybe playing a little bit more in the middle. But it was a weird thing to see him as almost a holding midfielder for like the last 20, 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's talk about him being like a like-for-like replacement for Diaz. I think this is where they kind of see him fitting in long-term.
That would be great. That would be fantastic if he, you know, if he fills in for Diaz when you guys are up a couple goals. That's a great experience for him.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be nice if he gets a few places on the bench. He wasn't on there for the first match, but he made it this time. I'm sure that as the season gets more congested, we'll rely on him a little bit more. It's a good thing he's staying here with the team. That must mean that Pareja's got him off the U20 camp so that he can probably play and at least make the bench for this weekend's match against Portland, which is shaping up to be one which we will win, based on how bad Portland's turning out to be.
Yeah, hopefully we can have a moratorium on the phrase Cascadia Cup this year for once, because both Seattle and Portland suck, and I'm not really that sad about it.
No, they're turning into. They weren't too bad, the fans I ran into, but they definitely have a air of superiority about their fan base that is more than obnoxious, in my opinion.
Are you a Minnesota homer then, or do you have a different favorite team?
I mean, if I root for anybody, it's probably them, but I'm just more of an observer, honestly. I go to like five Minnesota United games. I went to five last year. I'll go to five this year. But I'm really just like a laser focused national team fan. I do like watching the Red Bulls. I'm a fan of their system and what they're doing. But my rooting interest is pretty. I'm a mercenary, you know.
Gotcha.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that.
All right, so the last thing I wanted to talk about with the FC Dallas is we kind of alluded to Reggie Cannon earlier and kind of like your thoughts on him. What were your thoughts on Reggie Cannon?
I thought he looked much improved. I was a little discouraged with the way he played in Champions League and in the game against RSL. I mean, not that he was terrible. He definitely was not terrible. He just wasn't. He wasn't like influential in a positive way. And, you know, he was culpable for a couple goals in there. So I was pleasantly surprised. I thought he looked a lot better on Sunday. He was more, his passing was crisp and decisive. He didn't try to do too much. He won the first 30 minutes on his flank, I would say. I mean, there was one time where Buana got a shot off where his defending looked a little clumsy, but otherwise he won that battle with Handwala Buana, and he showed an ability to to be calm and step past a defender with the ball, you know, to sort of relieve pressure. I love to see that from defenders. It's such an advantage for the whole team when somebody can do that, because it relieves pressure on everybody else and opens up space and, you know, destabilizes the opponent's sort of shape a little bit. Long story short, I was impressed. I thought he looked a lot better than he did earlier in the campaign. What did you guys think?
Yeah. So I was watching him and I was thinking the exact same things in the first half. And then he comes on the local broadcast at halftime. They did an interview with him and he basically said that Oscar told him before the game, "Hey man, keep it simple, be calm, focus on defending. You can attack whenever it feels right, but like your main focus is the clean sheet." And so, you know, you could definitely see that he didn't try to push things. I think in the first couple games, there's a lot of problems with him and Barrios running the same channels on the wing, and they just kind of would step on each other and kind of get in each other's way, and it would peter out the attack a lot of times. But this time, you know, with him holding back, it gave Barrios more room to go on the wings, and Grezo actually pushed up quite a bit and would kind of fill in and give Barrios somebody to pass back to in the middle. And I think it opened up a lot of tactical options for the attack, having him not be so attacking focused.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I love the way he overlaps, so I don't want him to stop doing that completely. I'm sure you don't either.
No.
But I do wonder. I mean, my one criticism is his final ball has been pretty iffy so far. So that's obviously he's working on that, and that's, you know, he knows that that's like a key component of his game. But I'd love to see him, you know, drop a couple dimes in the next few weeks, you know, make the right choice, cut it back, or, you know, hit somebody right on the head with one of his crosses, hit one of his teammates on the head so they can head it into the goal, just to be clear.
No, yeah, he definitely has that X factor. Now it's just a matter of putting it together with the rest of the team. And I think once he starts being able to do that on a consistent level, I don't see why this guy doesn't get a call in for the next, or maybe not this year, but start getting at least a mention with some of the weaker off-season, the MLS-only U.S. squads that they sometimes do during, I think it's around January time sometimes, where it's just the domestic players. I could see him getting a call up as somebody they look at if Yedlin goes down or something happens with him.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think he's got a long ways to go, but he's only 19. That's the beauty of this whole thing. That's
right.
That's what's so exciting about him is when Yedlin, people forget that when Yedlin was 19, he was playing for the University of Akron, you know, but Reggie Cannon is getting like professional starts week in, week out.
Right.
So he's got a huge head start. He's got every opportunity, I think.
Sure. You're listening to the Dallas Soccer Show with Dustin Nation and Tristan Vick. So, speaking of the national team, let's talk about the upcoming men's national team camp. I think we're playing
Paraguay.
I think we're playing Paraguay.
Yeah.
What do you guys make of the roster? Who are you excited to see from there? What should we be looking for?
You want to start, Tristan, or?
Sure. The ones that jump out to me on this squad, I'm always interested in our goalkeepers. I'm weird like that. I think that we need to replace the current generation with some new blood. I've always been a fan of Ethan Horvath. I haven't really read why he's not in the squad. I don't even know if he's been playing much, but I'd love to see some more of this Alex Bono guy from Toronto. They've obviously gotten a rough start, but hey, it's good to get new guys in there to kind of push Hamid and Stefan. I've always heard good things about Will Hamid, and I feel like he just gets on really crappy DC United teams that kind of make it so that it's hard to justify calling him up. The only other ones that really also throw me out, I mean, Timothy Weah is the headliner, I think, if you have to be honest, but at the same time, it's a weird squad in terms of who's going to be the leader in terms of on the field, but also who steps up. And I think Bobby Wood is a dark horse candidate for next men's national team captain in term. He strikes me as somebody who is always seized an opportunity when it's been given to him. And it says a lot about somebody who's kind of just gone over to Germany, plugged away in the second division, finally gets promoted, gets onto a bigger club, Union Berlin doesn't get promoted, gets close to being promoted, but then he gets kind of bought up and he makes the best of his opportunities. And I could see somebody like Bobby Wood being a huge factor for some of these younger players and challenging them and helping them kind of get used to being the senior team squad that is day in and day out known by kids around the country. Really, there's a lot of pressure, I feel like, for some of these guys not making the World Cup. So I'm interested to see Wood's reaction, how well he plays. And then I want to see what Weah does, if he links up well. And then Kakuta Mane, that's a cool little call up. You know, it's another one that people weren't expecting, but that they kind of bring in at the last minute. And so I'll be interested to see that. And then do we have a back line? That is always the question.
Yeah. I think, you know, to one of your questions, like who's going to be the leader? I think I agree with you that Bobby Wood's is a good dude, and he's like put in the work, and I think he's going to be part of the national team for, you know, through the next cycle, unless, you know, his form has been pretty rough at Hamburg. But I think he'll come out of that. I'm confident he will. But I think the leader in this group is like hands down another Dallas kid, Weston McKennie. I think he's a lot of people think, you know, Pulisic is going to be the next captain. I think McKennie's going to be the captain for 10 years. He's got a huge personality. He is, if not in the starting 11, he is like automatically coming off the bench for the second best team in the Bundesliga at the age of 19. He's been a leader on every team he's been on.
He was a captain at some of the youth teams.
Well, so there's like a sort of twisted, sordid, sort of like not very clear story about that, but he had some kind of falling out with Richie Williams. Who is the guy who was accused of, you know, giving Jonathan Gonzalez an ultimatum, either you, when he was 14 years old, either you sign up for the residency or in the next 15 minutes, or we withdraw the offer, you know?
I heard that story.
I think US soccer ended up denying that, and it might not have, there's probably like some truth to it, but it's not completely true. Who knows? But anyway, same guy had some kind of falling out with Weston McKennie, and that he was left off some key rosters. So I know Tab Ramos wanted him for the U20 World Cup last summer, but Schalke would not release him. And there's good reason for that, because he was fighting to be to join the first team. He was coming out of like a really successful U19 campaign. Mm-hmm. So I think not only does he have like the intangibles, like he loves playing for the country. You could see that when he scored that goal against Portugal in his first and only cap. He's also, I think, maybe he's not as flashy as Pulisic, and he'll never be as famous as Pulisic probably, but I think he's as valuable to the national team setup. Now, a lot of people disagree with me on that, but he plays center mid. He's tough as nails. He's good in the air. Like way good in the air for his size. He's only like 5'11", and he's a very, very good passer, you know, in a way that like Tyler Adams hasn't developed. McKennie can like receive the ball in traffic, take a couple touches, and then find somebody in a productive way. So That's who I'm most excited to see. I think he's at this point, he's like an automatic starter, and I want to see him be a dominant force. I don't think they'll make him the captain. He's still only 19, but I think he's a leader, and he's going to keep making his mark. I don't think we're going to be able to heal from the wounds. I said this on Twitter the other day. We're not going to be able to heal from the wounds of 2017, or even begin to, until we see McKennie and Pulisic on the field together, which we still haven't gotten a chance to see. It's such a crazy story. I mean, they're our two best young players. I think it's pretty clear, and they play for arch rivals across the river from each other in Germany, Schalke and Dortmund.
Yeah, that's I think we did a way too early in retrospect. Pick your 23 man team to the World Cup.
We called it the way, way too early roster. So we got our CYA in.
Yeah, McKennie was on my squad, but I'm just throwing that out there.
He was.
So that was back in July or August of last year. But
oh man, you were early on the bandwagon. That's cool.
I'm big on the youngins. I think our talent, this FIFA generation, it's like how people say that millennials are just like lazy know-nothings. And like at the end of the day, we're probably going to be the ones that are fixing all the world's problems. The U.S. soccer generation of that is like the baby boomers are like Bradley, Dempsey, and guys like Altidor now. And instead, you got to look at this younger group that's kind of coming in, and I mean, they're coming from all over. It's so random where some of these guys come from. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, do you see what kind of the common themes are? It's they start young. They maybe play a year in the MLS at like 17 or 18. And then they're playing in Europe every day, or at least making the bench every day. And those are the ones that really, really, I think are going to have lasting effects on the team. So yeah, I'm big on the youngins.
Well, yeah, you know, my co-host on our podcast, Greg Velasquez, he makes the point that like both with McKennie and Gonzalez, these are, you know, Monterrey and Schalke, they fill stadiums with 50,000 capacity for every game. You know, these are like big clubs with high expectations, and Schalke is, you know, trying to get into the Champions League. They're probably going to get into the Champions League for the fall. Anytime you have an American abroad playing for like a legit big club and like in the plans starting or, you know, close to the starting 11, they've always been a nailed on national team call up. And the excuse for Arena and not calling these two guys up was, oh, it's like they're too early in their careers. Well, you know, the vetting, Greg would make this point, the vetting has been done by the club. They decided back in the summer, these guys are in our plans. We're going to like have a roster spot for them, and they're going to be playing regularly. And in Gonzalez's case, starting every single game. Arena should have noticed that. And he shouldn't have called up. I mean, God love him, Dax McCarty. I know he's a great guy. We shouldn't call up Dax McCarty to have him sit on the bench. You know, what's the point? Call up Wes McKennie. He is unquestionably one of the best 23 American players in the world at 19 at this point.
Yeah.
So that's a big frustration for me with that whole debacle. And to be more positive about it, I'm really excited to see McKennie continue to make his mark with the national team.
Does he have siblings?
He has an older brother. Because
I know that there's like a lot. Oh, okay. I know there's a couple of them that are, there's a few siblings that are dual nationals from in Germany, or like one of them's there and one's here. And so it's hard to keep them all straight sometimes.
Neither of you guys really mentioned Tyler Adams. I know he's been getting a bunch of hype lately with the performances with the New York Red Bulls. Do you expect to see him get in this game, or do you think that he's just going to kind of fill a spot?
I think he'll get in the game. Yeah. I think my best guess is it'll be he and McKennie next to each other in the midfield with maybe Will Trapp in the six. Mm-hmm. And I'm high on Adams too. I think like much like McKennie, he has a really big personality. He when he played wingback for the Red Bulls last year, he just bossed his side of the field. I mean, he owned it. I think he has room to grow as a center mid. Like I tried to say earlier, I don't think he's quite as good as McKennie at sort of the 360 degree, you know, the stuff that Mauro Diaz does so well. You know, he's always checking his shoulder. Right. He's like, he knows where he is. He understands the situation all the time. And his first touch is always into like the perfect spot. Mm-hmm. And then he hits like a killer pass. McKennie is a lot more like that than Adams is. That's my view on things. And if Adams is going to play a six or an eight at the international level, he needs to get better at that. That said, he's a lot of energy, a lot of, you know, he's strong in the tackle. He covers a million acres every game. So that's great. And I think we'll see the two of them together. And when I watch Red Bulls, I'm always looking for, you know, a clever Mauro Diaz-esque turn from Adams, or like, you know, just a nice little touch to relieve pressure. And I haven't seen enough of that, but I'm always watching for that. And I'll be watching for that when they play Paraguay on Tuesday from Adams.
How about Christian Pulisic being withheld from coming by Dortmund? Are you okay with that?
I'm okay with it. It makes a lot of sense. He's playing, he's in a battle for playing time right now. And Dortmund has 8 games left in the campaign. I think they're like they're 1 point, 1 or 2 points behind Schalke. For him to stay in Germany and rest and get ready for that home stretch is totally understandable, especially given how meaningless this friendly is. You know, anyway, what do you think? I mean, I'm disappointed he won't be there, no doubt about it, but it makes sense to me. What do you think, Tristan?
He's earned legend status. He's earned the ability to say, does this match matter for now or any other future campaign? And the answer is no. So I would agree with that. I mean, I watch Dortmund. That's the team that I like to follow in Germany. I've always really liked following Pulisic's journey over there. And I feel like he has earned himself more than the right to have that type of what's the word, I guess, not status necessarily, but just the ability to say, look, I mean, I'm cap tied. It's nothing about getting playing time, but you got to see new players. That's what the fans want. And frankly, it's probably what everybody at US Soccer wants to have is move on for a little bit and kind of see what we have going for the future.
Didn't I read
actually, sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I think I read that it wasn't his decision. It was Dortmund's, and they even held back some of their Germany players. Did I misread that?
I mean, Dortmund would have to release him. I mean, it is an internationally sanctioned break.
It's a FIFA break, so they have to if they get asked.
Oh, maybe. But, maybe I read some fake news.
Well, no,
what
I mean,
they did with Dortmund is like an injury is what, like they did this with Aaron Ramsey at Arsenal, where the squad was announced on like a Friday or something, or maybe it was the Tuesday and there was a midweek game or something, but they announced it the day before an Arsenal match that he wasn't going to be with Wales because of a surgery. Then he played the next day with Arsenal. And then the next day after that, he had a surgery. So like they'll have the injury or whatever, but really it's like, it's a great 2 weeks where we don't have any matches. Let's do this basic operation and scope the guy's knee or whatever it was. So
yeah,
maybe
I don't think that's what's going on here. I think it was just more of a conversation between the player, the club, and Dave Sarakin. And Sarakin, I think, is, as much as I've criticized him, I think he's a reasonable guy. It's Pulisic. I mean, Dortmund has struggled this year, and Pulisic has also struggled, and I think everything Sarakin says makes it appear that they had a conversation. Pulisic really wanted to come play, but he reluctantly asked for a pass this time because he knows how crucial these next few weeks are for Dortmund. I mean, maybe I'm gullible, but I really think that this is just a bunch of people being reasonable with each other, you know?
What? In this world?
I mean, you know, when you say, right, when you say, Tristan, that Pulisic earned it, I think Weston McKennie said it best in an interview last fall. He said, you know, he scored 12 of the 17 goals that the U.S. scored in qualifying, and it's still, he carried that team on his back, and it still wasn't enough. And you, it's just a lot to put on a 19-year-old. And then he was only 18 at through much of qualifying. We saw his tears in Trinidad. I mean, it's pretty hard to look at those photos. So yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if he thinks it makes more sense for him to stay in Dortmund right now, I mean, who's going to argue with that? Not me, certainly.
All right, we're going to play a quick game before we get into a little bit of the U20s and some of the future prospects coming through. And it's a game I want to play because, like you said, you're a national team guy first and foremost, but it's a game called Will We Ever See Him in a U.S. National Team Shirt Again? And I'm basically going to run down most of the roster from the Trinidad game, but do you think we ever see Guzan or Tim Howard again in the national team shirt?
I don't know. Are testimonials a thing at the national level?
Do they even do that?
I don't know.
For these guys. These guys are branded now.
I think probably not Howard. Almost certainly not Howard, unless there's a testimonial. He's not in the plans. Guzan, maybe. But he hasn't been that, he hasn't looked that hot for Atlanta so far in this campaign. So yeah, definitely not Howard unless it's a testimonial, and most likely not Guzan either. Are those answers too mealy mouthed?
No, those work. Those work. I'm assuming Beasley's in the Howard camp. DeMarcus is, and then I personally would throw Beasler, Cameron, and Graham Zusi in there.
Yeah.
I could. Stoke City has looked pretty awful this year.
That's true.
I don't know how you recover that status of, but he plays in the Premier League, and it's, well, yeah, but they're one of the worst teams in the Premier League. So
I've always been, yeah. I mean, I've always been a fan of both Cameron and Beasler. I wish they had been the center back pairing against Trinidad. But I mean, it doesn't sound like Sarakin's going to be calling in Cameron anytime soon. There's not a lot of love lost there. So if Sarakin's the coach through the end of the World Cup, Cameron's only getting older. I don't know, man. Those are hard ones. I think Cameron and Beasley are not Zusi. I don't ever want to see Zusi in the shirt again, but Cameron and Beasley, I think, still have something to offer. And I don't think our young center backs are good enough to like clearly displace them.
Right.
I think next time we do this, we need to get a chess timer, something you have to hit the answer, hit the clock.
Yeah. Sorry. Long answers.
No, you're fine.
Just making it funny.
My favorite ones to pick on: Michael Bradley, Josie Altidore. Do we see them again?
Yes. The answer is yes. We're going to see both of them again.
Okay.
We don't have any good strikers.
That's true.
Bobby Wood and Josie Altidore are the only two strikers, and neither is world class, obviously. Yeah, it's all we got.
Yep. And Josh Sargent is still in puberty, so we're going to let him sit.
Yep.
But that's a good transition for our U20 team. Do you feel like this U20 squad that they kind of brought in, it looks like it's got a pretty good mix in terms of European and foreign-based players. Are there any surprises on some of these youth squads that you are excited to see? Players that maybe haven't been in there too many, or somebody that's maybe surprised you by staying over in the United States before moving abroad?
Well, let me circle this back real quick to Tim Weah, because he and Andrew Carlton is on this roster, this U20 roster, and I'll watch anytime he plays soccer because I think he's so fun to watch.
He was amazing in the U17 World Cup. I will say that.
Yeah, he was. And Weah had a hat trick in that game that Carlton really like dominated.
I remember.
But Carlton was the one who was creating all those chances, you know? So I think, you know, Weah is the headliner on the Paraguay roster. I think a lot of people are excited about him, but I'm not convinced of him yet. I think he's very promising. I'm excited that he's getting minutes at PSG, but Carlton for me getting a 12-minute cameo at Atlanta United is almost as impressive because Tata Martino doesn't like playing young players. And I mean, or doesn't like playing players who aren't sort of the finished product. And Atlanta is stacked with attacking talent. And Tim Weah got to play for PSG when they were like in the middle of the Champions League. Neymar got injured. They're like, I don't know, there's like 20 points clear in the table. There's just no way they're not going to win the league. So I'm not surprised that Carlton's on the U20 roster, and I'm excited that he is. But I think people who say, oh yeah, Weah is like, you know, I'm really excited about Weah being on the national team roster, but it makes sense for Carlton to stay with the youth teams. It doesn't quite add up for me, even though I'm not like arguing Carlton should be on the national team just yet. So that's my axe to grind.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I definitely think Andrew Carlton has a really bright future. He seems to know. What always impresses me is the decision-making in a player.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of the other parts of it, you can kind of coach. Obviously, like speed, something people say you can't coach. But if you have quick decision-making and good fundamentals, that's really hard to top. And it's weird to say that in like an overcoached country like the United States, but we produce a lot of overcoached players that have horrible fundamentals. Yep. But they have great speed, or they have... they can dribble, but they can't do anything else. So when you get somebody with the fundamentals like that, it's really nice to see that.
Yeah. He's a problem solver. You know, he figures things out on the fly in a way that you see a lot in like world-class players from other countries. I'm not saying he's world-class. He may never pan out, but, he's got something that we don't see too often. So I'm super excited to see him play at any point. Obviously Josh Sargent, aren't you excited about to see more of him?
I think that guy, yeah, he plays with a fire. It's Dustin, you'd love this guy.
Oh yeah.
Because he's a ginger. He's a ginger. You're a ginger guy.
I have three redheaded daughters, so
awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They would love him too. So you need to start watching more Werder Bremen. But no, I think Sargent, I think his size and the way that he has good control of the ball in tight spaces is really important. But he also isn't afraid to take the shot, which I think the biggest criticism we have of every striker the U.S. has ever had is that they fail to take the shot at opportune times. But Sargent really bossed the U20 World Cup and the U17 World Cup with the way he was able to take. He was creating a lot of chances on his own, but he was just taking shots when he got them, which is nice to see.
Yeah. He's very technical and just like efficient with the ball at his feet, you know, whether that's in the box or whether that's like his hold up play in the attacking third. Dustin, if you're not familiar with him, I think you're going to be really excited when I can't wait till he starts. He can't play for Werder Bremen right now because
he's got to wait till the closed season or whatever.
Yeah. He turned 18 after the transfer window closed. So there's some like technicality. He's not registered to play until the next season starts, but he'll likely be in the first team for Bremen in the fall. And then we'll really get the hype train rolling. Cause I think he's got the tools to be, you know, a kind of a Brian McBride, but better, you know, maybe like a Robert Lewandowski, but a little shorter and ginger.
Well, he's certainly got a last name you can remember and you can make lots of puns with it. So yeah. I look forward to that.
There's also a couple other guys on the U20 roster that I'm excited about. I mean, Chris Goslin was a high performer in the U17 World Cup, so I'll be interested to see how he does. Sergino Dest is a right back in the Ajax Academy. He starts every game for their U19 squad, and their U19 squad is like not far from the first team, and the first team for Ajax is stacked. I mean, they got a bunch of guys who are going to be sold to the Premier League over the next 3 or 4 years for very large sums of money. And so the fact that Dest is a lockdown starter for that U19 team, which is a very clear pipeline to the first team, is a very good sign. He's athletic. He's not like Danny Alves. He doesn't pull out a bag of tricks at right back, but he's technical enough and a very solid defender. Excited about him. Beyond that,
is Jake Morris related to Jordan Morris?
You know, I don't know. I wondered that too.
Because I know the Roldans play together at Seattle.
They only take them in pairs. Like you have to like sign up your younger sibling if you.
It's so weird. Yeah, I'm curious to know what you think of some of our defensive talent. I mean, I remember Dest being in there, but I don't recognize many of these other names on this U20 roster from the, I guess not too many would have been on there, but some of the U17 World Cup guys would have been on there.
That team didn't have any true center backs, as I remember. Right. Like Durkin had to slot in back there.
That's right.
His absence is a good thing. Just as Pomacall's absence is a good thing. They're both on their first team in MLS. I think Durkin might get his first start for DC United this weekend. The one center back on the roster that I've heard is good is Sam Rogers, who plays in Seattle, I think.
Gotcha.
Six big kid. He's like 6'3". Aiden Stanley, who grew up in the same club as Josh Sargent, he came up as a center back, but he plays left back for St. Louis FC, the USL club. And he's going to Duke. Huh. I put up some GIFs of him the other day. It seems, I mean, you know, when you see somebody who's performing pretty well against USL professionals, they're probably going to be good with the U20s. And he looked pretty good. So I'll be watching for him. I don't know the other defenders that well. There's a couple kids from Philadelphia Union, Mark McKenzie and Matt Real.
That's right. Those are the other guy that was on the U20 team or U17. They had one of the guys is from Philadelphia Union, but it's not those two. I can't remember who that was, but yeah, those are, I don't know. It's a different look, I guess. I guess as long as we have, I mean, while I have you here, I'll just ask you about some of the guys that have always shown and popped up and then they just fall by the wayside. But
yeah,
a guy like Zelalem, if he ever gets healthy again, should we be excited about him? Because he's very talented, but he's got that, what I said earlier, he's got those fundamentals, the things that most American kids don't have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. He had a really bad knee injury, as you know, and he's just recovering from it. He never really made an impact on loan in the Eredivisie from Arsenal. I mean, he's not going to like, unless, you know, something dramatic happens with his game, I don't think he's going to break into the first team at Arsenal. So, I mean, we'll just have to see what happens with him this summer. The problem he has, I think, is while he is technical and a good passer, he's kind of reminds me a little bit of Darlington Nagbe, kind of more of a shuttler than a, you know, like he passes, he keeps possession, he passes well, but does he make like a killer pass? I don't know. Yeah. And he's also not he's not like a defensive stalwart. So if you're not an attacking third menace and you're not like helping to hold down the midfield and in front of the back line, like what are you? Well, you're Darlington Nagbe. And that he's a fine player, but I would hope we can move past Nagby on the national team eventually, even though I think he'll probably start on Tuesday. And
right.
That's where I think Salalem is.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And then the other few that I can off the top of my head, looking at the thing. Oh, that's the guy. Austin Trusty was the one that I was trying to remember.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But that was the guy that played in the World Cups. And then Derek Jones, I think, played back there too.
That's right.
But yeah,
They're both too old to be in this group. And Trusty is a regular starter for the Union so far this season. So that's positive. A lot of teenagers getting real minutes in the MLS. I mean, if the current trends hold, they're going to blow their numbers out of the water for last year.
Yeah, no, I think there's definitely, and it's in weird spots too. Positions that we've had depth at times, but then also the one area I wish we had more were center backs.
Yeah.
That's the only spot that I feel like is lacking. So
do you rate CCV and Eric Palmer Brown? I mean, they're both in this national team camp.
So I haven't seen too much of Eric Palmer Brown, but I feel like I've been watching CCV for 4 or 5 years now. And I like Vickers' last name because my last name is Vic. So he's got that going for him. But
perfect.
Beyond that, yeah, he's the one thing I really like about him is he does seem to have very good positioning. The one thing and he's pretty physical. I mean,
very physical.
That's one thing that I like to see with our center backs is getting physical because I think that a lot of them, I mean, that's one of the things about Jeff Cameron that makes it hard for you to dismiss him, right? Is that he's somebody who really knows how to muscle up and mark people on set pieces. That's important for us to have on the national team. Mm-hmm. So I rate his chances pretty highly to do well this for this call up, but I also feel like I think that if he can really break through the first team at Tottenham, then he'll be long term. That's a whole another ball game though in terms of being able to really do that though. I mean, it's one thing to say it, but then you're like, oh, but I mean, they've bought this Davison Sanchez guy last year and he's kind of become the first team starting center back. So
from Ajax,
he's got to get through that.
From Ajax, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. There you go. So like there's, yeah. And so I don't know if, cause they buy players in your position, that obviously means that you're still somewhat down the pecking order. And I'm of the position, and this is kind of on Total Soccer Show, what they talk about a lot is players need to play. And if they're not playing, they can't be impactful for the national team. And so he's playing, he's getting time. And so I would hope that he moves up to a bigger club where he can get a little more exposure potentially, or a little bit more of a challenge and really develop and grow. Mm-hmm. But until that happens.
Yeah. Along those lines, Steve Davis, who's a local soccer guy. He does the broadcast for FTC Dallas, and he's got up the ESPN Soccer Today radio show. He's got an article that just came out on 442 today. It's called The Double-Edged Sword of the Play Your Kids Movement. And it's really long and in depth, but it's a really good read. And I would like to give a shout to that.
Yeah, I read
that. So what does he say?
He said essentially it's not as simple as like coaches don't want to lose their jobs so they don't take a risk on young players. It's much more nuanced sort of question. Like where are they on their development path? And like, how do they fit into the chemistry of the team at this very moment? How do they fit into like your tactical goals at this moment? It's much more complicated than just like coaches are scared to take a risk, you know? And I mean, yeah, sure. I get it.
I think it's really hard to, I like that. That's a good way of putting it, because you can look at two players who have gone abroad early on and kind of compare them. And it's a really, it's hard to, you can mention him and people will laugh, but people don't remember that Freddie Adu was scoring goals in the Champions League for a season. And like for Benfica, like he scored some goals for them and was playing at Monaco. And then next thing you know, he just kind of tails off and no one's ever heard from him since. And at the same time, somebody goes over like Pulisic at this, goes over there, spends like a year in the academy, and then he breaks through on the first team. And then he's, next thing you know, he's a starter. And I think it's a whole nother mindset in terms of having the talent, but also having a little bit more of, like you said, the ability to fit in, the mindset of the team and what the team needs at that moment. So
yeah, these guys,
hopefully there's more of the latter.
These guys have to be, I mean, what I think what the Freddie Adu situation shows us is like, it's so tenuous, you know, I mean, being a professional athlete in any sport is like, you're walking a knife's edge between success and failure. And if you let up for a few weeks or a few months, you fail. And particularly in like European soccer, there's just no time for somebody who like isn't like just desperately competing on the practice field and in the, you know, on the field itself. And, you know, Pulisic obviously has that fire, and I don't think Adu did, you know, I think he got sort of like, what's the word? He got caught up in himself or whatever, you know, caught up in his own success. Like
I think it's an oversaturation problem.
Yeah. It's not entirely his fault. Yeah.
It's an oversaturation problem. And, another similar situation was with Jozy Altidore. And one of the things that I hope that he's telling other players is that when like a guy like Bobby Wood, who's going through a little bit of a rut, is he's got to tell him like, hey man, like things aren't working, but they come around. You got to work at it. You just have to keep it going, because if you give up, next thing you know, you're not playing. And before you know it, they're not renewing your contract or they're selling you on. So I feel like it's going to happen where the players kind of start looking after each other as more players go abroad, because back in the, I say old days, back when like Donovan went over really, really early, those types of things, it was always quite a unique thing to see, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know.
Well, I mean, maybe a hopeful note here is that before Pulisic broke in as a 17-year-old in the Bundesliga, which like was the earliest greatest success by an American player of all time, you know, there was the last time we had like a teenager, even like teenagers, even really like doing anything at the professional level, multiple ones doing it was Donovan and Beasley in MLS as like 18 and 19 year olds. So now all of a sudden we have that. Now all of a sudden we have Pulisic at 17, McKennie at 19, where these are like, these aren't like fringe players. These are like core members of their very, very big clubs with huge expectations and like rabid fan bases as teenagers. And now we've got, Josh Sargent has a very good chance of following that path. I mean, Werder Bremen is not as big of a club as Schalke or Dortmund, but it's a, you know, very historic club with very mm-hmm. serious expectations. Keaton Parks is a little bit older, but there's a very good chance that in the next season that's coming up in the fall, he'll be like a nailed down member of the first team. And that's just more than ever before, you know, like it's not even close. It's a new era. If that all, you know, it's a new era with just Pulisic and McKennie compared to like, Landon Donovan at the LA Galaxy and DeMarcus Beasley at the Chicago Fire. It's no comparison. Right. And if we have like two or three more in the next couple of years, then it's like, it's totally different situation than we've ever been in. And the missing generation, like the guys who are Bobby Wood's age, who never really came good except for Bobby and like one or two other guys, that'll be long gone. And when we get to 2022, we're going to have just a lot more elite talent at our disposal. So I think that's, I mean, I'm sort of a merchant of hope. That's like my, that's sort of my, what I'm doing on Twitter and in my newsletter and everything. But I think it's like, it's legit. And I don't, you know, we don't buy in on every young player who comes along, and there's plenty of young players who get hyped that I don't think are that great, but in the aggregate, it's looking good.
Yeah, definitely some legitimate reasons.
I will also say that the FC Dallas Youth Academy and some of the other ones too, that you look at a guy like Pulisic, whose dad was a professional soccer player. It is a huge deal. Guy like Tim Weah, your dad's World Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. I think it's a huge deal to have someone who's done it before be that close to you and kind of see that you can take the challenge of being like, hey, you want to be a pro. This is what it takes. Or, and even if they're not amazing, but like half, not half, but there's probably like four or five FC Dallas Academy players whose dads all played at FC Dallas.
Huh. That's cool. Like Jesus Ferreira is one, right?
Yeah. There's like, yeah, there's and like one of them's the Oscar Pereira's kid.
Oscar Pereira's son.
Yeah. So it's, there's like four or five within the different U16s, 15s and 18s or 17s. And so, yeah, it's a really funny little setup there. Cause you're like, I recognize that last name. Next thing you know, you're, yep, that's so-and-so's son.
Yeah. So. It's like kids in America, you know, when I was growing up, you learned about baseball from your dad, you know, or football. And if we get to the point where like every, you know, every kid, every boy and girl, or like a large number of boys and girls in America are learning about, like learning to love soccer from their parents, that'll be a new paradigm. We're obviously not there yet, but
I agree.
Yeah.
Cool.
Before we check out here, if we can start off by doing some predictions. US plays Paraguay, nothing amazing. It's Cary, North Carolina, probably the biggest soccer match in Cary, North Carolina ever. I feel confident in saying that. Do you have a prediction? Is it going to be a win? Will Weah get a goal, or will it be a Bobby Wood show?
I think we're going to win 3-1, and it's going to be maybe like a Bobby Wood brace, and Kenny Saif is going to get a goal, and Weston McKennie is going to be man of the match.
All right, Dustin?
I'll go 2-2.
Okay.
So that's completely uneducated prediction.
Fair point.
Safe 2-2 draw prediction.
I'd take a 2-2 draw. I'd take that.
Fair. I'm going to go with a 2-0, and I'm going to guess that Rubio, no, he's never going to score. Novakovic, I teased everybody there for a second. Novakovic, I think, gets a goal, and then I like to go with the dark horse. I think that I could see Miazga getting a set piece, or maybe even Vickers. So I'll go with the center back getting a header off a set piece. And then I think Novakovic, heard some good things about him in his current season. So I could see him keeping that hot streak going into this match.
That's a great shot. The Miazga set piece. That's probably going to happen. Actually. Can I change my vote? No, I'm just kidding.
Yes. No, hey, no, you're
no,
locked
no.
in.
No, I'm
you're
locked in. I'm locked in.
All right. So,
where can people find you?
Yes. How do we find you? What do you have of yours that you'd like to plug here real quick before we go?
The easy thing to do is just look me up on Twitter. It's at Zleb Mata, which is Z as in zebra, L E, B as in boy, M as in Mary, A, D as in dog, A.
Is that your
name
backwards?
Indeed it is. And
All
my stuff. Yeah, you are smart. All my stuff is is on there. My newsletter and our podcast, and it's all
a scuffed podcast.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your. Yeah, tell us about your podcast.
It's me and a buddy of mine, Greg Velasquez, who lives in Des Moines, Iowa, which is about 3.5 hours south of here. we just talk about the men's national team once every 2 weeks. A lot of the same stuff we talked about today, is the kind of stuff we would cover. Young players. And
so if you enjoyed this podcast, check out the Scuff podcast. Yeah,
thanks for the,
is that what it's called?
It's called the Scuff podcast. It's on iTunes. It's on most of the platforms, I think. So thanks for the plug, guys. And yeah, that's where to find me.
It's great talking
to you.
Thanks
for coming on.
We'll have to do this again. And thanks for the time.
Totally. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.